Hey everybody, Scott Burnside back for another edition of Two Man Advantage, the podcast, part of the Athletic Hockey Show network of podcasts. Pierre LeBrun, as you and I are chatting here, we're going to have Adam Fox, Norris Trophy winner, is going to join us later in the show. I'm pleased to report that Hurricane Elsa has apparently been less than anticipated, and so as far as we can tell at this stage, all things go for Game 5 of the Stanley Cup Final in Tampa this evening. How are you doing? How are things on your end? I want to get your vibe. I want to know how you're doing.
My vibe is I want to get to the end of the month so I can disappear. It's been a long stretch with one season going into the other, and I worked right through it, as did you and as did a lot of people. But yeah, that's how I feel. Like I'm a little on fumes right now. Yeah. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, no, I feel your pain, my friend. And we are going to get to some off-season stuff. We're going to talk a little bit about Stanley Cup Final, which of course could be finished in a matter of hours. But I'm going to start with, you know, it's so incredibly sad, Pierre, to have followed the story of Matisse Kivlenyuk's netminder for the Columbus Blue Jackets in the Blue Jackets organization, and his tragic death in a fireworks malfunction mishap at the home of Manny Legacy, longtime goaltender and goaltending coach for the Blue Jackets. And it's just so sad. And I guess what has struck me in the couple of days since Matisse's death was announced is that just, you know, sort of the ripple effect. And it we talk about it, and maybe it's a cliche that, you know, the hockey family and all those kinds of things. But to me, this has reinforced that it is a young man from Latvia and, you know, trying to make sure that his family is connected and taken care of, but all, you know, teammates and former coaches and managers, a couple of whom I've spoken to, it's just, they've been absolutely shattered by this. And I just saw the sort of spontaneous response from the Columbus Blue Jackets fans gathering at a bar that you and I've been to a number of times, the R Bar, right near the arena. And again, spontaneous, you know, sort of gathering to honor the young man. And it's just, it's sad, and I honestly don't know what else to say. It's just so sad.
Yeah, and what are my thoughts after getting over the initial, you know, sense of loss and tragedy is that I hope that the Blue Jackets players and staff, you know, all get the counseling that perhaps they may or may not need, or comfort each other and make sure that they, you know, don't just park these emotions, but, you know, have an outlet to deal with it, because you know, this is something a lot of those players would have never faced before, and it would really hit home. And yeah, you just feel for, you know, his family, but also for the Blue Jackets family and how they're, you know, dealing with this right now. No question about it.
Yeah. I know it, just as we were starting to tape this, the Blue Jackets announced that, I believe it's John Davidson, president of the team, and Jarmo Kekalainen and GM will meet with the media later this afternoon. So, you know, obviously I think I'm with you. I think it's important to have discussions and talk to people and work through this. And anyway, I know Aaron Portsline for us is just, you know, done such an outstanding job of really putting this in perspective since it began. And the Blue Jackets will be adding further information presumably later today. So stay up to date on that. All right. Hey, there's no easy transition from something like that, but we will transition nonetheless. And I was thinking about a lot of the discussion going into Game 5 in Tampa this evening. Of course, dramatic victory for Montreal in overtime. Honestly, the moments when Shea Weber went to the penalty box for the double minor at the end of regulation, and all I could think of was how terrible is this going to be for Shea Weber and the Montreal Canadiens if this is how it ends? Because I honestly could not see how the Habs could actually kill off 4 minutes against that Tampa power play And yet they managed to do it, and Josh Anderson scores on a great play, he and Cole Caulfield, and we are going to game five. I wonder you followed the Habs so closely this year. What was your emotion like as you sort of saw this series extended by at least one game?
Well, I don't know that I had any emotion.
I only
have emotion for the Dallas Cowboys, my friend.
I don't mean that you were cheering for them, yeah, but you followed, you know what's at stake.
I'll tell you my exact thought. I turned to my wife, and as Shea Weber took that 4-minute penalty, which really put the Habs season on the line, and I said, they're going to kill it. They're going to kill it, because I don't know how many captains in the NHL are more beloved and respected by his teammates than Shea Weber is. And then by the Montreal Canadiens. And that's exactly, I mean, that was the PK of their lives against the best power play in the world. And in fact, on that night, Tampa somehow went 0-for-5, not from a lack of chances.
Oh my God.
Between Carey Price's heroics and a few timely goalposts. It's not like Tampa didn't have looks, but kill that 4 minutes, the Habs did. And after that, you kind of had to know how it had to end. And good for Montreal and good for the narrative, because you know, their run to the Cup final is legit. It's inspiring. It's I think brings the sport to its best in terms of players working together as a team. And you know, that's why hockey's hockey. I mean, this Habs run has been sensational, and to have ended in a sweep, I think would have taken away from it to some degree. And by extending it to five, and you say, oh, what's the difference between 4 and 5 if Tampa wins Wednesday night? There is a difference.
Yes.
Because people remember a sweep. I still remember Washington, in many ways, a similar Cinderella run in 98, getting swept by Detroit. And you kind of look back and think less of it, to be honest. But now that Montreal has won a game against this juggernaut Lightning team, I think it does matter. And I think it was a wonderful moment at the Bell Center. Josh Anderson with a big night, and the fans partying outside, since they can't be inside, most of them. But I think that was maybe as I tweeted that night, perhaps one last dip into the magic bottle for this Habs team that had so many good answers during this playoff.
Well, I do like the idea that the Tampa mayor did wish for a Montreal victory so they could win at home. And I got to tell you, there's part of me that's sort of wishing that the series just keeps going on, just to tighten the strings just a little bit. But
the Tampa mayor is going to have to go and witness protection if Montreal wins game five tonight, let me tell you.
Oh, my God. Well, it made me think, and you and I have been around a long time, which it goes without saying, but it is amazing how rarely, is probably the better way to put it, that the home team actually wins the Stanley Cup on home ice. And I don't know why it's like that. But of course, the last time it happened, you and I were both there, 2015 in Chicago.
Is that really the last time? Wow.
I'm not making this stuff up, my friend.
Against the Lightning.
Yeah. Against the Lightning, exactly. And you know what I remember? I remember about that night, terrible, terrible rainstorm, like flash
storm,
summer,
right?
Thunderstorms and floodings on all those surface streets leading up to the United Center. And you know what the result was of the flooding? It delayed the arrival of the Stanley Cup at the United Center. And
yes.
I always felt bad. And you know, when you talk to Phil Pritchard, who's the head of the Hall of Fame and the king of the keeper of the cup, there are
not the head of the Hall of Fame itself,
well,
but yes, the keeper of the cup.
Curator,
yes.
I believe, is his title. That's a head title. It's an overarching title. He's the face of the Hall of Fame.
How about good man.
Poor Phil had, you know, because the part of the deal is you don't bring the cup to the building until late.
Well, it used to be the deal.
Right.
So you got to finish the story. Or, you know, one of the ramifications, first of all, you know, the Stanley Cup was delayed because of that storm. They didn't get to the rink on time. And so the Hawks just kept, I mean, they didn't care. They just kept celebrating and hugging each other while the proceedings were delayed. I don't remember by how much. We'd have to Google it in real time here. But
it was a little while.
At least 10, 15 minutes, I think. Yeah.
Yes.
And I remember running into Commissioner Gary Bettman after the proceedings in the hallways of the United Center. And he looked like as angry as I've ever seen him. And I said, how about that, you know, I made kind of a crack about the cup being late, and I got to be careful. I don't really want to, you know, because it was said and gone.
But, it was just, you know, a casual, not
casual conversation. But the gist of it was that that was never going to happen again under his watch. So what's happened since then, of course, is that the cup is in the building all day long under watch, right? Yeah. So that'll never be delayed again. Yeah, that was a good memory by you. I totally. I was going to say my memory of that night was, because we walk around the ice after we're allowed on the ice during the celebration and the media, sorry. And you go from, you know, one little grouping to another and just try to do your interviews with the Blackhawks players on the ice. And I remember walking by Brandon Saad, who was tremendous in that final, and embracing Stan Bowman, the Hawks GM, and kind of overhearing, you know, your typical GM player conversation at moment. You know, we could have never done this without you, I think Stan Bowman said to Brandon Saad. 2 weeks later, Brandon Saad's in Columbus.
Yeah.
And again, it was just because after every cup, the Blackhawks have to do the salary cap gymnastics. And so Brandon Saad traded just a couple of weeks later, literally from that very emotional moment on the ice where you're winning a cup. So it's always, that's the reality of it. And by the way, imagine if Tampa wins tonight, or if they win this series at some point. I mean, what's that, you know, how quickly that core, well, not core, but parts of this team are going to have to move on in mid Stanley Cup party, right? Yeah. I mean, the Lightning have 14 players on their contract for $85 million. That's not going to work. So the cap gymnastics are going to come in a hurry here in the next couple of weeks for Tampa.
Yeah, well, and actually, you know what I've liked about this lead up, and we shouldn't be surprised, because John Cooper is, he's so self-possessed, and he's so, you know, he's self-aware, and he's not afraid to, you know, to have those, you know, kind of, it's not an uncomfortable conversation. It's real. And I thought he's done a nice job of sort of alluding to, you know, this group understands just what you said, that this is, you know, this doesn't last forever. It's remarkable what they've done in, you know, basically 14 months or less than that, but whatever, you know, from the bubble cup win in Edmonton to on the verge of winning back-to-back cups with basically the same roster. That it's a remarkable achievement, but it's also one that everyone who understands even the least little bit of the business of this game, and especially in this time with the flat cap, the reality is that you're right. I mean, how many players, what's the conservative estimate of the regular group that takes the ice tonight? And I know Alex Killorn's not going to play tonight, but let's throw him in that mix. Is it four or five or six players who may not be back almost all entirely because of economics?
Which is how it happened all the time with each Chicago Cup in particular. They seem to have to do more than some of the other teams. But yeah, and you know, Goudreau and Coleman, two-thirds of that remarkable third line for Tampa, two great playoff seasons, that third line with Yanni Gord. They're both UFA, Goudreau and Coleman, and they were not making a lot of money. It's time for them to cash in to some degree, right?
Right.
Especially Blake Coleman. So I don't know how they can both stay, maybe one of them. It's hard to tell at this point. You know, Tyler Johnson, we've always linked him to Seattle because he's from Spokane, and you know, he can't. It really makes no sense now for Tampa to have a fourth line $5 million player. But of course, easier said than done. I mean, Tyler Johnson cleared waivers twice last offseason as Tampa was trying to juggle, right? So I'm curious to see, as we speculated for almost a year, what the price will be for Tampa if it wishes to go down this route. I mean, they could obviously make deals with other teams. It doesn't have to be Seattle. But if they decide to try and park Tyler Johnson in Seattle, if it's a first-round pick, if it's a top prospect, if it's both, I mean, what's the price to get Seattle to play ball on that? So many interesting stories coming, but cup final's not over yet.
Yeah, well, that's true. I know, and I'm not being presumptuous because, and I know, I think back to the first round of the playoffs, which only seems 8 years ago. Do you remember you and I having the conversation? Basically, we'd already anointed Toronto the first-round win because I'm sure we taped when they are up.
I don't think I did.
I don't think I did.
I am very cognizant of being a TV/media figure in both Toronto and Montreal. I am very careful not to annoy.
Okay, maybe I'm misremembering then. Maybe it's just me. I'm transporting it. But anyway, yes, you know, it's a good point. And here's the great thing about Tampa, and we talk about Julian Brisebois, and of course, you know, there's still a lot of Steve Eiserman's fingerprints all over this organization. But I look at that team, and whether it's, you know, and I'm sure that Ron Francis in Seattle is looking at the same thing, but I mean, there just seems to be no end of, okay, so we're, you know, okay, let's assume, you know, Blake Coleman is going to go somewhere else, Barkley Goodrow as UFAs. The kid that I thought was so interesting came up at various points near the end of the regular season. There's Alex Barre-Boulé. Ross Colton, I think, has done a nice job when he's been pressed into the service in these playoffs, a real, mm-hmm. you know, can fit in that, you know, in your bottom nine anywhere. Like, Tampa has just done such a nice job that, to me, even though they're going to miss, whether, you know, Tyler Johnson's not coming back, so they're going to miss those players. But this team still, it seems, poised to me to be right in the mix. I don't see them. I don't care who goes. I still see this team as, oh yeah, the Lightning are going to be right there.
Right. Well, I mean, they've got the best goalie in the world in Andrei Vasilevskiy, arguably the best defenseman in the world in Victor Hedman, although we have the actual Norris Trophy winner, Adam Fox, on our show later today.
Yes, we do.
Later in the podcast, yeah. I don't know why I said later today, literally in a few minutes. And you know, arguably top three or four, five forward in the world in Nikita Kucherov. Do you agree? I mean,
yes.
Our trophy winner. And so those guys aren't going anywhere, those three. I think, you know, the difference is that they have to move forward without the same depth. But much like the 2010, 2013, and 2015 Blackhawks, or at least leading into 14-15, the Blackhawks kept playing around and moving some of the deck chairs around and took other runs at it. I think Tampa can. I think a three-peat's probably unlikely, although we'll have fun talking about that all of next season, depending on what their roster looks like. But the idea that they might be able to contend again the next couple of years, given, again, the goalie, the D, and the forward, I think they absolutely can.
Okay, we'll talk about some non-playoff stuff, some, you know, coaching hires and things going on. We got the expansion draft now looming even larger in our windows. But I want to ask you, we were talking about how rare it is to see a team win a Stanley Cup on home ice. We mentioned the 15 Blackhawks doing it at home. The year before, LA wins at home.
Mm-hmm.
In 14,
Alec Martinez.
There really haven't been many, though, right? Like, you and I covered the 06 Cup win in Game 7 in
LA won both their cups at home, 12 and 14. So we were there for both of those.
That's right. Yes, yes, they after going up 3-0, the Devils somehow punished us by making us fly back and forth across country twice. So. But no, true. Kings get to celebrate twice at home. Carolina did in 06. Anaheim in 07 as well. Is there a moment, or is there one of those that you're like, oh, I'm so glad I was there to see that market and those fans celebrate that moment?
Yeah, I think Chicago in 15, you know, because it was the third cup in 6 years and they hadn't been able to do it at home yet. And just, and to be honest, even that night in that moment, I don't know that we truly thought they could massage the cap again enough that they could, you know, it felt to me like they had maximized their window in that moment. I remember thinking that, and what a wonderful thing for Hawks fans to be able to live that night, despite the weather, though, mind you.
That's true. I thought that Carolina win, coming the first win out of the lockout, a really interesting final series against, you know, a team that sort of two teams that came out of nowhere out of the lockout with Carolina and Edmonton, and boy, it would be a long dry stretch for the Oilers after that. And I like that one, and the fans rewarded in Carolina. You know, after it was sort of, you know, people like to make fun of the Carolina organization and the fans, so I was pleased to see them.
I will say, and this is not a criticism at all, I think every market has their own way of celebrating and doing. But it hit me when I left the rink in Raleigh that night that the streets were very quiet.
Yeah,
that there was really nothing going on around the rink, and you know, and how different that would be in other markets after winning the cup. But I would also tell you that I think that would be different if they won the cup again here soon.
Oh yeah,
that I think that that fan base has grown by leaps and bounds since then. And that if they got the chance, and they certainly have a chance, the way they built that team up, I think it would be a different scene on the night of perhaps winning a cup at home there than it was in 06.
Yep, no question. We might even have to make a reservation at Bates Battaglia's bar, the Lucky Bees, where we celebrated before Game 7 back in the day. One of the epic writer events leading up to a Stanley Cup. So, and there have been a few. So,
yeah. No comment.
No comment. That'll save that for the book. All right.
Oh, my goodness. That book only gets published after I die.
It'll be like the... Anyway, it's always the Warren Commission after the anyway. We won't go. Anyway, so I enjoyed your piece earlier this week. You talked to both Kevin Adams, GM of the Buffalo Sabres, and Bill Armstrong, GM of the Arizona Coyotes. Coyotes hiring André Tourigny. Am I saying that right? Have I got the right?
André Tourigny.
Tourigny. Of course, well known in Major Junior and international circles for his work with in the Canadian programs. And I wonder what you know, were you surprised when you, and of course, we already talked about it last week when Don Granato was confirmed as head coach in Buffalo. But I thought it was interesting you talked to two GMs who are trying to revive franchises that have had all kinds of issues. And I wonder, you know, what were the takeaways for you and maybe, you know, sort of reason for optimism for one or both, or what was your takeaway?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I was happy with the way that story came off because I the more I thought about, I mean, part of it was last weekend, you know, Canada Day. And last week I took a few days and I was thinking when I come back, I'd like to make sure we don't just pass over the fact that Buffalo and Arizona made those coaching hires, because I think there's a national angle to it. And to me, there's so many overlaps between the Coyotes and Sabres. Unfortunately, for a lot of negative reasons because of what's happened over the past decade plus, but also positive reasons in that I think they both have, you know, first time GMs who are trying to think outside the box here and you know, made coaching hires that some people, you know, weren't that impressed with or at least are saying, let's see. And that's okay. It's okay not always to do what you think people want, you know, the sexy hire, because that's often worked out. And one of the examples I pointed out in my column with, you know, with Arizona and André Tourigny, you know, not a very heralded hire at this point of his career, although I always thought the way Tourigny was tracking, he would be a head coach one day in the NHL. It just came quicker than I thought because, A, you know, he had a pretty good gig at Hockey Canada. If people listening aren't aware, like he had left the OHL for this season and for next season as well, so that he would be the assistant coach at this past Men's Worlds, then the assistant coach for the Olympic team in Beijing, and the head coach for another World Juniors, and then head coach for the Men's Worlds next May. I mean, those are a lot of key high-profile events that were part of his Hockey Canada gig, and he's willing to, you know, to leave that behind, obviously, for an NHL head coach opportunity. That's why I was surprised. Not that he would be a head coach one day, but that the timing of it. But the example that I like for Arizona is Jared Bednar. You know, when Colorado replaced Patrick Roy with Jared Bednar, let's just be completely honest, guy. It didn't blow you over at the time, right? It's sort of like, okay, so they promoted Jared Bednar. Let's see how this goes. And then, of course, the Avalanche are terrible. They lost place in the league. But the idea, I think, was that Bednar would grow with what the Avalanche had decided to do in their reset there, right? Their rebuild. And it has worked. You know, I mean, I think Bednar has grown with this young Avalanche team. And I think that's what Arizona is trying to do with André Tourigny here. Yeah, the Coyotes are going to have to reset this thing. They are going to get worse before they get better. They're going to get younger. They're going to trade away some pieces. And there's going to be some pain. So the idea, I think, is that this coach will have the patience and the teaching capability to get through these rough waters and come out of it on the other end with this team as it looks differently in a few years. That's the notion here with Arizona. And I think there's some similar, you know, from talking to Kevin Adams, same type of patience and teaching that he sees in Don Granato being able to work with not only a young Sabres roster now, but it might even get younger by the end of this offseason with some trades that are coming. So real, I think, overlaps between what the Sabres and Coyotes are attempting to do here.
Well, and you and I have talked about this a lot, and I couldn't agree more. And in fact, I was looking it up, and people forget about Jared Bednar and the Avs because they're such a dynamic team now. 22-56 in his first mm-hmm. year, and like they were,
and the point being that he didn't lose his, he kept his composure through that,
exactly,
and his presence around young players, and so it's that job's not for anyone.
Here's the thing, and you and I talk about this, and it's something that's in short supply, really. I mean, you talk about the patience. It's more than patience. It's the vision, and the vision has to be consistent from ownership to management to coaching to the locker room, and every single person has to be in lockstep on what that vision is. And if people aren't, then you have to peel them to the side. But you and I both know that, we're talking about vision and patience. That costs a lot of money, right? It costs money to be in the NHL and not make the playoffs year after year. It just does. And so, I hope ownership in Buffalo and Arizona have that kind of, not just the patience, but that they sign on for the vision and that they're willing to let, good people do their jobs, even if it takes a period of time that causes them, ongoing pain. And it doesn't happen all the time. It's just that people get impatient and they get tired of losing money. And they say, well, how come Florida's doing okay? Let's throw this out and do something else. Well, you do that and you're in the same boat for the next 5 years anyway. So that's my rant.
And I thought, Kevin Adams' comments, very passionate about what's happening here. And, he specifically mentioned guys like Dylan Cousins and Dahlin and Casey Mittelstadt as a young core that he's going to build around. The point being, it's who he didn't mention. That's the story, right? And that's okay, because that's where this is headed. And I, I went and read some of the comments underneath my column, and it was interesting that, because I have to think this is so hard for Sabres fans, who are one of the great fan bases of the league.
Agreed.
To have to go through this yet again. And yet a lot of the Sabres fans who commented underneath my story were like, as painful as it is, this is what has to happen. Like, got to move on from Michael and probably Reinhardt and rejig this thing again, but do it right. And there's no guarantees, of course. You could be back in the spot in 3-4 years, but I don't know what other option there is. I mean, that culture has to be changed again. Got to have guys who want to be there. And, this is the way to go about it.
Yeah, good point.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And as promised, joined by Adam Fox, Norris Trophy winner, the New York Rangers. Adam, thanks for dropping by. And listen, I know the Norris is that's a nice thing. I'm sure it was nice when you won it. I have a more important question to ask you off the hop. And as you know, you and I spoke earlier in the season, and your defense partner and roommate, Ryan Lindgren, you guys live together. You've got a great system going on, and you also have an indoor putting green in your place. And I want to know, at the end of the season, who was the king of the putting? Who was the putting champion at the end of the season? To me, that is foremost in my mind.
Yeah, that's a great question. I'd say it depends who you ask. it was a very streaky game. I think I went on some runs and then he went on some runs. So depends who you ask. I'll give myself the nod, but I'm sure he would say differently.
Well, when did you, I'm curious about what his response was when you actually won the Norris. That must have been, you know, as I mentioned, you guys not only live together, but are partners on the ice. That must have been nice for you guys to share that kind of honor. What was that like?
Yeah, it was awesome. I mean, I think we both were just like, we couldn't believe it. I mean, we thought it was crazy. Obviously, you know, we've known each other since we were 16, and I don't think either of us would have expected to be in the positions we're in at that time. But yeah, I mean, obviously I thanked him. I don't think I win this without, you know, playing with him, you know, most of the season. And, you know, he's a great player and obviously, you know, one of my best friends. So it was definitely a nice moment to share with him.
Have you had a chance to look at the names on the Norris Trophy, Adam, and from over the years and the realization that you're part of that very, very elite club now?
Yeah, I mean, obviously you look at the names and some of the players that, you know, my name's associated with now. It's crazy to think about, I think. I'm not always, you know, thinking about it. I think sometimes you could just brush it off like, oh, I won. And then sometimes you actually think about it and it's crazy.
Well, so I'm curious, Pierre and I have done award ceremonies in Vegas and, you know, in a normal year, we know what that would look like. And now this is 2 years in a row where it's not normal. Walk us through, like, were you at home? Where were you physically when you got the word? And walk us through what that moment is like for you.
Yeah. So I was leaving a workout and, you know, got a call that I had won, and, you know, I was able to tell my family and, you know, and that kept it on the down low. And, you know, obviously then had the presentation with, you know, Brian Leetch, and that was pretty awesome, you know, being a Ranger legend and, you know, just being able to have him present, it was pretty cool. But yeah, I mean, finding out I won was definitely surreal. And, you know, being able to give my family the news, you know, myself was obviously a cool moment for me too.
You know, Adam, you've entered the league and look like you belong from the moment you got on the ice. And I think it's interesting over the years, the debate that different players at your level have about how many college seasons they want to get under their belt before they make the jump. But like for you, what went through your mind as you decided to, you know, to play, you know, 3 years of college hockey? Some players just do one, some players do two. Obviously, given your success here, you must feel like you nailed the path.
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously a lot of it, you know, is opportunity and, you know, obviously you need a little bit of luck. But yeah, I think I just wanted to be able to, you know, be a really impact player, you know, especially at the college level first before making that jump. And, you know, after my junior year, I feel like I did that. And, you know, you never know what to expect when you make that jump. You know, you hear different things and, you know, you see different players who you know, go different ways. But I think for me, yeah, I think I just wanted to be, you know, as ready as possible and feel as confident as I could and know that I was ready to make the jump. And, you know, obviously when that time came, and I made that decision and yeah, it worked out.
I'm curious. I mean, you mentioned Brian Leetch, and I thought the NHL did a great job with sort of setting it up with, you know, important people presenting the awards. I thought it was great that Leon Draisaitl twice got to give awards to Connor McDavid and press him on how important his line mates were, his teammates were, which was kind of fun. You talked to Brian Leetch, obviously, with the presentation part, but I'm wondering if you heard from people that, you know, surprised you. I don't know whether, you know, youth coaches or teammates did you hear from people after winning the Norris that you were like, oh, wow, that was really cool. I'm really glad they reached out or whatever.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, my dad was always asking me, you know, throughout the week, you know, who's the least expected text you got and, you know, who did or didn't text you. And, you know, I must have got, you know, 300 plus texts or calls and it was a lot to sort through. But yeah, I mean, there is a lot of people to thank. Obviously, you know, it's a long journey to get to this point. And youth coaches, you know, skill coaches, skating coaches, everyone in between is you know, to thank. And, you know, obviously when they reach out, you thank them for their help. But yeah, it's definitely it's awesome when you could have, you know, reconnect with people who maybe you haven't spoken to in a few years and you know, just be able to talk to them after a while.
You know, what you haven't been able to do yet is play playoff hockey in the NHL. And of course, you're only a couple of years into your career. But I'm wondering, you know, over the years, I know some players watch it really attentively, even if they're not part of it. Others just can't bear it because they're so jealous they're not part of it. But where do you fall in terms of paying attention to how the playoffs have played out here? And again, trying to glean how different it is, right? It just feels like a different animal every year when the playoffs come on.
Yeah, definitely. I think, I grew up a hockey fan. And, I love watching hockey. So I think I like watching. But, yeah, there's always that, bittersweetness when you see another team celebrating, winning a round or even, eventually winning the Stanley Cup. And obviously a little bit of jealousy sets in. But, you are watching and seeing the intensity. And I think the bubble that we had was a little bit of a, test to it and, kind of an experience for a little bit of playoff hockey. Obviously, it's a different intensity. And you can't really prep for it till you're there. But yeah, I mean, obviously I enjoy watching it and, obviously trying to see little things of, when that time comes of, how guys play and the little differences between that and the regular season.
I mean, it has been an off season with lots of stuff going on around the Rangers, various levels. We've had Gerard Gallant on our podcast back in the day. And I wonder if you had some conversation with the new head coach of the New York Rangers and maybe what your vibe or your first impressions are of Gerard and what it means to a team that I think will go into next season with, extremely high expectations as it relates to being a playoff team.
Yeah, obviously, I think I've heard nothing but good things about him. I heard, players really like him and, he'll go to bat for players, which I think, everyone loves. And I haven't spoken to him too much. He reached out to congratulate me. But obviously, you hear positive things about him. And, he's dealt with teams similar to ours in the past and definitely just excited to get going. And, I know he's a great coach. So I think we're all excited to get going here.
I think you're going to love playing for him. I can tell you that. And by the way, good catch by you. I was thinking when I think playoffs, I think the 16 teams, but you guys did have that play-in series in the bubble, which feels like 17 years ago to me. But yeah, that was last summer. So technically, I think you're down for three playoff games so far in your career.
Everything gets lumped together over the past year and a half. But yeah.
Yeah. Now let's talk Olympics. The NHL hasn't completed a deal yet with the IOC, so who knows what's going to happen, although we should find out in the next couple of weeks. But if NHL players are invited to participate for the Beijing Olympics, no doubt your name is going to be in that conversation for Team USA. What would that be like for you if you get selected?
Yeah, I think that would be a special moment for me. Obviously, that's kind of the pinnacle of representing your country. And for USA Hockey, I've been fortunate enough to play at various, events for them, whether it be World Juniors or World Championships. And, even was at the NTDP for 2 years there. So, whenever you represent your country, it's awesome. And, if you're able to play at that level of it, it's, the top tier for it. So, hopefully NHL players are able to go. Obviously, that would be awesome for a lot of guys, but obviously, we'll see. But yeah, if are able to play in that, it would be special for me for sure.
And I'm curious, does it come up in conversation? Like just, whether you're working out in the off season or does it come up? I look at that Ranger lineup and, there might be seven or eight guys that could be on their various national teams if the NHL is going to Beijing in 2022. Does it ever come up? And I wonder what's it like when it does come up in conversation?
Honestly, I don't think it's really been talked about too much. I think, during the season, I don't think guys were really focusing too much on that. But I mean, I think everyone would love to have the opportunity to whether go for themselves or see NHL players in it. I think it's obviously nice when it's, the top guys there. And, but yeah, not too much conversation about it. Honestly, I don't think, guys have really discussed it too much.
Adam, I think what sets players at your level apart is, and I've seen this over the years, I remember Sidney Crosby early in his career talking about different things he needed to work on after he just won a major award, never happy with his game. What would you say you'd like to work on with your game, even after winning a Norris Trophy, but that you'd like to work at?
Yeah, I think for me, it's kind of been the same thing since I was, 16, 18, I think. I've always been able to think the game pretty well, but it's always that physical attributes. I'm always trying to, work on my skating and, you know, work on my shot strength. I think all that just, you know, the way I play could help me become, you know, an even better player. I think, you know, if I'm able to add some strength and, you know, be a little stronger on guys and, you know, work on my shot, maybe, you know, get a few, you know, a few more goals and finish a little better. I think, you know, stuff like that could definitely help me, you know, in the future.
We'll ask you one more, Adam, and let you go, but it's sort of a nice segue. I mean, you were talking about, you know, sort of thinking in the game, and I was reading a piece by Molly Walker, The Post, and I understand you've got some other chores in this offseason to take care of, and it sounds like you're a couple of degrees short from your psychology degree at Harvard. What's left, and why is it important that you take care of that? Why? I think of a lot of people who said, well, you won the Norris, take the summer off, you know, put your feet up and play some golf. But it sounds like this is something that's really important to you.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, so I got two more classes and then, you know, I'll get my degree and graduate. But I think for me, I think, you know, ever since I was a kid, going to Harvard was kind of the main focus for me. And, you know, graduating there, I think it's more just honestly fulfilling and, you know, something that I wanted to do from the start when I got there. And, you know, obviously it's an accomplishment and no one could, you know, take that degree away from you. So yeah, I only got two more classes and, you know, it'll definitely be nice to finish up. I joke around and tell people I'm a Harvard dropout instead of, you know, left to sign. So I can finally say I'm a graduate at some point.
Well, I wonder if there will be a temptation to maybe on a cover sheet of whatever assignments you're putting in that you could put the press release from the Norris. I'm just saying, I don't know whether that helps in the marking, but you might want to consider.
I don't know at Harvard too much.
You know what? I think it's a good calling card, though. I feel like when you email your buddies, there should be like a signature thing at the end of your email that says Harvard grad Norris Trophy winner. I feel like that's pretty strong.
Yeah, I don't know if that'll probably catch me a few jabs if I signed off emails or texts with that to them. So I might just keep it with Adam at the end.
Well, that sounds like a good way to go. But it's been great to catch up, Adam, and really pleased for you, obviously, on of course, the Norris, but also finishing up the degree. That's quite an accomplishment. And I hope you enjoy your off season. And I hope Pierre and I often say this at the end of our conversations with people. I hope that we're crossing paths in real arenas sooner than later. But thanks for coming and hanging out with us today. It's been great.
Yeah, definitely. I always a pleasure to talk, and yeah, definitely. Hopefully we'll see each other in arena soon enough.
Good stuff.
All right. Great. Yeah. Thanks, Adam.
Enjoy your off season.
Thank you.
All right, my friend. And I thought Adam, he's a very polite young man. He did not call you right away when you erased his 3-game playoff experience in the playoff round against Carolina last summer. But I'm with
But I think part of it is he probably doesn't feel like he's played real playoff hockey yet. If you listen to what he said, he's saying he kind of got a feel for it in that little, like he kind of referred to it as like the preamble to the playoffs. Yeah. And that's how I feel about it. Like, I think, you know, I think that you got to be in the 16 to be considered a playoff team. And that's how I look back at that bubble event last summer. But, you know, you may feel differently.
Yeah, no, it's I must admit, I don't think of the playoff play-in round as anyway, I don't consider it a playoff. So I'm with you. I, in fact, when you said it, I was like, yeah, you're right. Anyway.
Yeah. But I tell you what, he's, you know, so well-spoken and, you know, I mean, the guy's going to have a Harvard degree, but I think that he is going to be in that very elite group of guys that have played this game that will never be satisfied with what they've accomplished, that want to find yet another level. And that's why those players are so special. That's why they end up having the consistency and piling up awards and being different than other guys who sometimes may have those seasons and then disappear. They're two different type of guys at that level, and I think Adam Fox is going to be in that very elite level.
I'm fascinated to see what happens between now and the start of training camp because, you know, we were talking about Kevin Adams and Bill Armstrong earlier and the work ahead of them. You think of Chris Drury, who became the GM after a tumultuous end of the regular season and the changes at the upper level of that organization and all of the talent and all of the moving parts now for this Ranger team. And it's like the and correct me if you think I'm wrong, but I think the pressure is going to be enormous for this team to, you know, and whether it's adding a guy like Philip Deneau or a Blake Coleman, that kind of toughness and skill to help the already, you know, top end skill on that team, whatever changes, a lot of pressure on Chris Drury to make the right moves so that this team takes another step forward. And, you know, Adam Fox is a huge part of that. But, man, there's so much to like about that team, but they're not quite there yet. And they play in, man, that division is so tough when the Metro gets back to together. I think it's going to be a fascinating offseason for the Rangers.
Well, Jarrod Gallant's track record.
Yes.
He will maximize what he has on that roster. That is his track record. Yes.
Good point.
No matter what kind of work you do, how you communicate is key. Grammarly is your AI writing partner to help you communicate more effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact at work. Whether you're sending emails or writing a Slack message, the last thing you want is a grammatical error. It just looks unprofessional. Just a little bit of help from Grammarly can make a big impact on your work day to day. 96% of Grammarly users report that Grammarly helps them craft more impactful writing. It works across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, tone suggestions help you navigate even the most difficult work conversations. Save time with one click and go from editing drafts in hours to seconds. 93% of professionals using Grammarly Premium report that it helps them get more work done. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Sign up and download for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
All right, my friend, here we go. We've got some questions coming in. Ask the Dorks. We missed it last week because we had such a jam-packed show, so it's good to get back to some of this. Let's start with Yannick Larondo. You know, I now say all the French names with a French accent. Are you with me?
No, I'm not with you.
Okay. All right. No matter this, a Montreal fan, no matter what happens in this final, what do you think Marc Bergevin should be focusing on this summer to be even more competitive next season without touching the core too much? And, you know, you got the Seattle expansion draft factored in there too. When you look at this Hab lineup, there's, you know, like every other lineup, there's going to be some changes.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, to me, the Philip Deneau situation, him being a pending UFA, looms large. I mean, he's proven yet again that even with a reduced role in the sense of offensively, with Suzuki really now clearly the number one center offensively, and Kotkaniemi through his ups and his downs with a bigger role moving forward, that Deneau still, as a shutdown center, is such a big part of this team winning. Do they circle back to each other and try to make a deal work? We know that was according to reports, a contract, rejected back in the fall. That's number one for me. And then I was talking to a front office executive from another team. He was talking about the Canadiens and how he really liked how they, put things together in this playoff run. But he feels that clearly either whether it's through the development, continued development of Romanov, but or going out and finding another reliable defender, that they can't rely that much year round on three defensemen, essentially. I would argue four, but he said three at the top end of that blue line, especially with, Shea Weber, who has been tremendous in these playoffs, but getting on in age. He feels that if he were Marc Bergevin, he would go out and try and find another top four blue liner just to further, deepen that group.
I'm just curious. You and I have talked a lot about Philip Deneau and, of course, a huge goal the other night in game four. You and I've talked about how difficult it's going to be to, I don't know, handicap's not the right word, but as a UFA, he really is in sort of his own little space because his skill set is so unique. Do you think the playoffs have really, have they changed it dramatically in terms of teams that might say, I can live with, maybe not all that much offensive production because I want that player on the ice in critical moments next season? Has the playoffs changed that much for Philip Deneau, do you think?
It's so hard to say. I wrote about that last week and got varying opinions. I don't know if you saw that, Scotty, but yes. I had some front office people putting in that $4 to $4.5 million, which I thought was way too low. And then I had another one point out that his numbers the last 5 years are almost identical to Jordan Staal, who's a $6 million player. And, you know, I think he's at least a $5 million player, if not north of $5 million, because, yeah, he doesn't score a lot anymore, but he shuts down every top scorer in the league. I mean, there's got to be some value to that, even in today's game where everyone is two-way and not necessarily the old shutdown centers of the past, right? The Guy Carbonneaus of the world and so on. But I don't know what else he has to prove. I mean, he's that intelligent a player and has that much of an impact defensively.
I got a couple related questions here. This will be good, and actually a good segue after talking to Adam Fox of the New York Rangers. This is from Mark Miotto. With reports that Jack Eichel is looking to opt for surgery, is it time for the New York Rangers, he says, to put up or shut up when it comes to acquiring him? But maybe we just say, you know, is it time? The Rangers, you know, they covet a franchise center, or would Jack Eichel fit that role pending what they do with their existing roster moving forward? I mean, you still got to factor in, you know, what your plan is for Mika Zibanejad moving forward, who has one more year left on his deal. But let me synthesize it. You like Jack Eichel as a fit for the Rangers? I know they've been connected at various points for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, it's not as sexy as when David Quinn was still that coach. But yeah, I mean, the number one center is still the unicorn for the Rangers. I just don't know. Like, I think if you're Buffalo, you're trading him west if you can. You know? Now, maybe that at the end of the day, the best deal is not west. You know, whether it's Anaheim or LA or Calgary. I mean, I think there are teams that could make sense. Minnesota has shown interest in Eichel. But at the end of the day, if the Rangers step forward, and I do think the Rangers have again showed interest. I don't know that they've been among the more aggressive teams. Hard to say, but I think the tie will always go to the team out west. Don't you? I mean, why have them in your crosshairs for the next, you know, different division, I get, but still, same conference.
Close for comfort. Yeah. And actually, that's a good segue because John, at John Sink 604, he wonders, Vegas, could they take a healthy run at Jack Eichel? And you and I have talked about this. You know, that was a disappointing playoff series against Montreal. The Habs doing such a great job at neutralizing, you know, what should have been a, you know, much more dangerous Vegas offensive group. And I think it did highlight a team that probably needs to address its center depth. But boy, Jack Eichel's a big, that's a big ad. There would be lots for Kelly McCrimmon to do, in order to accommodate Jack, but I think it's a fair question as well. And it goes to your point on if Kevin Adams can move Jack Eichel as far away from Buffalo, he's going to do it.
Yes, I think that's a given. And it's also a given Jack Eichel will never play a game with the Sabres again, I think, in my mind.
I may be the only person. Okay, maybe it happens. I just keep thinking to myself, listen, if Kevin Adams doesn't get a deal he likes, he's got a great young coach, Don Granato. Couldn't Jack Eichel live with that? But anyway, no one. I am the only person who I've talked to or heard who says, well, you know, he doesn't have to trade him. He's under contract for 5 more years. Anyway,
but a year from now, on July 1st, less than a year from now, my goodness, his full no move kicks in.
Yes.
So suddenly Jack Eichel has all the leverage in the world if there's a trade scenario. I think you have to do it now.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, I just say, yeah. Okay. You know me, sometimes I'm a contrarian. Sometimes I'm just wrong.
Often.
Oh, well. Often.
No, contrarian, not the wrong part.
Yes. All right, let's take one more. How about from Matthew Jex at MJex19? I thought this is a good one to close out on. In hindsight, is there a recent player, let's say since the 04-05 lockout, that didn't win the Conn Smythe Trophy that you feel really should have? There's probably no one that comes to mind for you, but anyway, get you.
Oh, my goodness. I've had so many rants on this over the years that I feel like I should have turned the page. But how can I not answer? How could I not answer? No, Chris Pronger was robbed of the Conn Smythe in 2006. I mean, ridiculous, to be quite honest. So Edmonton went to seven. Chris Pronger played 74 minutes a night during that cup run for the Oilers. Carolina, full value for being cup champions, but Cam Ward, who was terrific, didn't even play every game, right, in that playoff?
But he played very well when he did play.
He did. No, and this isn't about taking away from Cam Ward's performance. The point is, no one was more valuable to his team in those playoffs than Chris Pronger, period. So that's my answer.
Okay. Who else, though? Really, that's like shooting fish in a barrel. I knew that would come up, and that's a good one. It's funny, we were talking about 2015, and I'll go back to 2013.
Oh, I know you're going to go there, because our colleague in Chicago, Mark Lazarus, is still beside himself that... Kane over Corey Crawford. And I get his point. And you know, one of the things is we've gotten to cover so many Stanley Cup finals as you know, and we're so fortunate for that, is that the beat writers only get to Cup finals when their team makes it. And I think right. What happens is when you go to the Cup final every year, the reality is the goalie in some way should win the Conn Smythe every year, period. I mean, how can you win a cup without your goalie being great?
Yep.
And so yep. I had developed my own thing over the years where for the goalie to win the Conn Smythe, it has to be extra special. Every goalie's great when you win the cup, but how much more special? And so, and that's my own personal definition. It doesn't have to be everyone else, but, and I got to say, I'm, you know, I am one of the voters for the Conn Smythe again this year. And Andre Vasilevsky is giving me a lot to think about because I think he is that extra special, right? I mean, he's been unbelievable. So I got to be careful. I don't want to give away my ballot before I vote, and we'll see what happens tonight. But certainly, to me, the debate between Kucherov and Vasilevsky is really close for me. I voted Patrick Kane that year. I think you did as well. He had so many huge goals in the final two rounds for the Hawks. But there's no question that I will accept the Corey Crawford argument there. I think if Corey Crawford had won that year, he would have been full value.
Well, and here's the other thing that sometimes people, you know, and basketball is different, I think, and sometimes people, it's, I don't know whether recency bias is correct, but people think, oh, well, who was the best player in the final series? It's a four-round trophy.
That's why it's such a great trophy. It is
a great trophy.
8-9 weeks of hockey, yeah.
Well, and I think, you know, going back to 2013, if my memory serves, like Duncan Keith was really, really good at, you know, some points, and then, you know, same with Jonathan Toews, but I remember the argument very closely, but Patrick Kane was consistently delivering the goods, and I thought it was the right choice, and I defended
just
it
like
as well.
Duncan Keith was a no-brainer in 2015. I mean, oh my God. I remember thinking, this is one of the easiest Conn Smythe votes I've ever had. Yes. Like,
I was
so
going to say
dominant.
That exact same thing. Yeah. Yes, no, completely. All right, and the only, I'll tell you the one that I certainly wasn't upset about it, but I, you know, to me it was so close in 2018 of getting Kuznetsov and Alex Ovechkin.
Yeah,
remember
really
talking
close.
Some GMs.
Yeah.
Really close and really, you know, it's fun when you have those debates because it's not, I don't think in general there's a wrong answer to what this, you know, even with Cam Ward ahead of Chris Pronger. In general, you're talking about degrees of excellence at the greatest time of the season for players. You know, it's not, you're not taking a player who gets knocked out in the conference final or the semifinal. So there are teams who are right there at the end. So it's a great
another
exercise.
Good one, another good one was, and again, no wrong answer, but the other, there have been a couple of close ones. One was Justin Williams and Drew Doughty in 2014.
Yes.
A lot of us were going back and forth. I ended up going Justin Williams because he was so clutch, but had Doughty won, I'd been, yeah, of course. The other one was Crosby against Phil Kessel. Remember, that was a debate. I can't remember if that was 16 or 17. It wasn't as much a debate for me as it was for others. I know some people felt Phil Kessel should have actually won. No. Sidney Crosby's contributions on those back-to-back Penguins teams at both ends of the ice are, it's just, don't overthink it. Give the MVP to the guy who was the MVP.
Yeah. All right. Now, that was good work today, my friend. What else we got here? We got Judd Brackett, the director of amateur scouting for the Minnesota Wild, joins Mike Russo this week on Straight from the Source. Interesting times coming up around the NHL, of course, the expansion draft and the real draft a couple of days after that. I look at my calendar, it's like 2.5 weeks. Unbelievable. Mark Lazarus from The Athletic Chicago joins Ian Mendez and Haley Selvian on The Athletic Show Monday at The Athletic. What else we got here? We know that The Athletic Show expands to 5 days a week. Everyone knows that. Of course, the new show Friday, The Prospect Series with Max Boltman and Corey Pronman. And you should check out our comments section for each podcast episode at The Athletic app and rate and subscribe to The Athletic Hockey Show on Apple. If you aren't already a subscriber, go to theathletic.com/hockeyshow and receive a subscription for $3.99 a month. My friend, can't wait to talk to you next week. May adjust the schedule. I got a little travel next week, so the schedule may be a little bit off, but don't worry. We'll be back with another episode next week.
Yes, we'll be airing next Thursday instead of Wednesday. We can tell our listeners. Yeah,
we like to keep them on their toes. But anyway, fine work by you. Great to have Adam Fox on. And buddy, have a great week.
Right on, right on.